Welcome to the Mind Gal Podcast, the show where we break down anxiety one show at a time and give strategies to release your negative thought patterns so that you can live your most fulfilled life. Get ready to challenge your narratives and gain the tools you need to overcome obstacles with your host, Monica Pitek Fugetti, a national certified licensed mental health counselor with over 15 years of experience helping people achieve their goals.
Hey guys, it's Monica. I hope that you all had a very good week or are having a really good week. Something happened to me this week that really brought to attention something I want to talk about today. So it's the end of the year. I work in a school. People are retiring. And there was a retirement party that I was invited to. Known this person for all the years that I have worked at this school, which has been about 14 years now. And good relationship with her, and I get this invite. So great. I'm going to RSVP that I'm going to go to this retirement party. But then I started talking myself onto the ledge, really, because I started telling myself that, no, they must have sent the invitation by mistake. They don't really want me there. I don't have anything to add there. And then it got me thinking, what kind of stories am I telling myself? And how often do I live in the space of fraud, right? Like, my biggest fear is being found out. My biggest fear is that people are going to know I'm a fraud. What is that called? Well, we all know it by imposter syndrome. So I want to talk today about imposter syndrome because I think that a lot of people can relate to that. Some people experience it for a limited time and others battle it forever because they feel like they're always incompetent, while other people feel like maybe it's just situational. It is directly related to a person's sense of self. And the more self-doubt that you have, so like if your self-doubt is overinflated, so for example, if you think that you are bad at absolutely everything, then it can be more difficult to develop a realistic self-image. And when you're not able to develop a realistic self-image, you are going to suffer from imposter syndrome. So I have suffered from imposter syndrome all of my life. It's not as bad now because I know who I am. I'm very aware of myself. I have a very accurate self-image, I believe. But historically, I've always suffered with what-ifs and being a fraud. So I still have that insecurity. It's still strong in me. The force is strong in this one, as Yoda would say. And I think that a lot of people can relate to this. So let's dive in. So first, let's talk about what imposter syndrome is so that we all have a working definition of what we are going to be talking about. So imposter syndrome is the idea that you've only succeeded due to luck and not because of your talent or qualifications. Both men and women experience imposter feelings. That's really important to know too, because I do think that a lot of people think it might be more prominent in one gender over the other, but I really think that it's more prominent in one gender over the other when that gender is in a stereotypical gender-biased profession or situation. So for example, a woman in business, like a CEO of business, might feel more of an imposter syndrome in that situation, where a man might feel more of an imposter syndrome maybe in education, maybe, because in K-12 education, it's dominated by women. Historically, and the research has evidenced that both men and women suffer from it. There's this book called The Secret Thoughts of Successful Women. It's by Valerie Young, and it shows patterns in people who experience imposter feelings. And I want to delve into those patterns today. And maybe you'll notice yourself in some of these patterns, and maybe you'll notice some of the people that you love in some of these patterns. So let's get started. So Valerie Young, in her research, she was able to identify five types of imposters, quote unquote. So they include the expert, the perfectionist, the natural genius, the soloist, and the superhero. So let's kind of go through these one by one. The expert, that can be explained as somebody who will not feel satisfied when finishing a task until they feel that they know everything about the subject. They will constantly hunt for new information, which it'll prevent them from completing tasks and projects. So those who avoid applying for a job be, because they do not meet requirement may fall into the category of being an expert. I think that I can kind of identify with that a little bit, not in every area of my life, because it is important to note that having imposter syndrome does not mean that you are any one of these five types all of the time in every single area. But I know that when I'm feeling overwhelmed and I'm feeling like I should be an expert at something, I have to talk myself into starting new tasks because I'm afraid that I'm not going to be able to actually perform it. So that's really an important indicator. So the second one is the perfectionist. And I know that I had an episode that we talked about perfectionism. I had a 3-part series. And if you haven't listened to it yet, go back. It was like episode, I don't know, 3, 4, and 5, I think. 3-part series on perfectionism. But those are people who aim for perfection and they'll experience high levels of anxiety. If you listen to any of these podcasts that I had, you'll know that I have said that perfectionism is really just a socially acceptable way to wear our anxiety. People who suffer with perfectionism have anxiety, doubt, and worry. And when they fail to achieve their goals, it gets even heightened. They're usually not satisfied at all with their work ever, even if it actually is something that's really great. I see this a lot in the setting that I work at where a 95% is not good enough because they should have gotten a 99% or even a 96%. I see a lot of perfectionistic behavior in that area. They'll focus on the areas where they could have done better rather than celebrate the things that they did well, which I think is really interesting because most perfectionists that I know will do really well. And so when they get the results, they might not like what they see, but 90% of what they did was stellar. But they'll focus on that 10% because it's not good enough unless they get 100% all the time, which is also very interesting because 100% all the time is unattainable. So perfectionism is a fallacy, right? We're never going to achieve perfection in all areas of our life. A lot of times that perfectionism can coexist with being the expert as well, needing to be the person who knows about everything. And perfectionists and experts, they'll often manifest a lot in the same way where they won't start a task because the expert will feel like they will fall short of knowledge base. They will feel like they will fall short of outcome. All right, so then there's the natural genius. They're typically able to master a new skill quickly and easily, but they'll feel ashamed and weak when they cannot. I feel like sometimes my own son is like this. For instance, he's really good at building Legos. He can build a set from sight. He can follow directions really well. He's very creative with the robotics type of intelligence. But if you give him something to write, he will not even try. Because he will feel like if it doesn't come easily, then there must be something wrong with him. And he will feel shame. I will talk about the difference between shame and guilt on later podcasts. And I'll probably write some articles because I think that that is a very important distinction to make because the two are very different. So if you are a natural genius, if you identify that way, or if you know somebody who identifies that way, they will fail to recognize that nearly everyone needs to build upon their skills throughout life to succeed. They need it right away. They need to be perfect at it right away. They need to get it right away. And it's very hard to convince them that, you know, you have to learn to crawl before you learn to walk because they don't always have to. Sometimes things come really easy to them. So then there's the soloist, and they may also be known as the rugged individualist. So they prefer to work alone and tend to believe that asking for help will reveal their incompetence. I identify with this one quite a bit. I often say I do not play well in the sandbox with other people. I would prefer to work alone than in a team. It has nothing to do with my appreciation of other people. I love people. I have good friends. I appreciate everybody's differences. But when it comes to getting something done, I do a poor job. When I'm in a group, I'm not a very good manager. I like to work alone. Oftentimes when people will offer to help, I'll turn it down. And that's kind of the MO of a soloist. They'll turn down help because they feel like
they'll feel like either it'll take too long to explain it, it's easier to do it themselves, or the person who helps won't be able to do it as well as they could do it themselves. The fifth one is the superhero. So the superheroes, they'll often excel in all areas, mainly because they push themselves so hard. So you can think of a workaholic as an example of a superhero. They'll overload themselves with work and eventually they're going to burn out. And I think it's kind of interesting because in society, we pride ourselves on perfectionism and we pride ourselves on workaholism. Let's try that again. We pride ourselves on workaholism. And I think that that is backwards. And I think it's sending the wrong messages, not only to our youth, but even our adults. As a 45-year-old woman, I feel like I offer value if I have perfectionistic and workaholic tendencies in me. And I know that's not right. It's not mentally healthy. So let's review the five categories of imposter syndrome, according to Valerie Young. So the first one is the expert. Then there's the perfectionist, the natural genius, the soloist, and then the superhero. And of course, they don't come in any order at all. All right, so now let's talk a little bit about what the risk factors are. Anybody can develop imposter syndrome. This is really important to understand. Several factors increase the risk, though, and those include new challenges. If you're faced with something new, you might feel like, oh my gosh, I'm not going to be able to do it, and I don't even want to try because I know I'm going to fail. Think about that. If you're a perfectionist or an expert, then you might feel like, I don't want to try it because I don't know anything about it and I need to know. And if I'm not 100% perfect, it's just not worth it. So they'll often not try anything. So when somebody suffers with perfectionism and it's a prevalent kind of thing that they suffer with, you have to know that asking them to do something new is going to be a trigger for them. And if you know that, then you can soften your words a little bit and you can lay the foundation to help them feel a little bit more safe and comfortable in risk taking. So another risk factor is growing up with a gifted sibling. My siblings had to deal with this because they had to grow up with me. Just kidding. I'm totally not gifted. And anybody who knows that about me. But if you do grow up with a sibling that is really intelligent or really successful or really athletic or just really good at a lot of things, and you are just what you consider to be average or mediocre, then oftentimes you're going to try to constantly match that sibling's accomplishments. And you might always fall short because you're not really taking your own abilities and strengths into consideration. So a lot of the times when a sibling is considered exceptional, a person may develop ingrained feelings of inadequacy in themselves. And then also being labeled the clever one. Children who are taught that they are superior in intelligence or appearance or talent, athleticism, they can develop imposter syndrome when they struggle to achieve something. I don't know if I've talked about really my issue with cancer. I know that I've thrown it in here every now and again, but just in a nutshell, I lost my hair. I had thought in my own head that I was known as the girl with the pretty hair. And so when I lost my hair, it really set me off on a trigger because I thought, I've got nothing to offer now because this is what I'm known for. What am I going to be known for now? And so that's the same when you have really intelligence or athleticism, or you're just really good at things and people start labeling you. That's why it's also really important to stay clear of labels. They can be very damaging. And even when we think that they're good, they're not always good. So that's really, really important to think about too. So let's talk a little bit about diagnosis. It may or may not surprise you to know that imposter syndrome is not included in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, or the DSM. The DSM is basically the manual. It's the Bible that mental health professionals use to look at criteria for diagnosis. And imposter syndrome is not included in that. However, it is also important to know that most mental health professionals have worked with people who exhibit signs and symptoms of imposter syndrome. So if you are experiencing imposter syndrome, you may have an actual diagnosis of some sort. And imposter syndrome might just be the underlying current. So for me, I suffer with anxiety. My diagnosis is generalized anxiety disorder. And imposter syndrome is a consequence of that anxiety. So even though it's not a diagnosable disability, it usually is. It usually coexists with an actual diagnosis, although it doesn't have to. You can have imposter syndrome all on your own. All right, so now you probably want to talk about overcoming imposter syndrome because you probably don't love living with it. I know that I don't. There are some things that you can do. They're not hard at all, but you do have to do them. And most of the advice I give, it's not hard. It's not rocket science. The hard part is in actually doing it because we have to change behaviors. Behaviors are hard to change. It takes, I think it takes like 60 days to form a habit, not the 30 days that we all might think that it takes. It takes like 60 days or something like that. And that's a long time to do something. But there are some things that you can do. And one of the things that you can do is to talk about it. You can talk to people that you know and you trust, friends, family, coworkers, whoever, and just talk about what you're feeling and talk about why you're feeling like you don't belong in a situation and what your fears are and what your insecurities are. Talk to a therapist as well. That's a really safe person to talk to as well, because opening up about your experience, it can help you. It can help you identify the source of the distress, because there is always a source of distress. The second thing you can do is you can educate yourself. Understand what the symptoms are. Understand the stories that you're telling yourself. I know I talk a lot about that, but that's really, really important. Educate yourself on who you are. Self-discovery is amazing, but it's hard. It's hard to look at yourself in the mirror and not like what you see. I know in my years of getting to the place of self-understanding and knowing who I was, those were hard years because there were some qualities in myself that I didn't like. And I didn't like looking at myself in the mirror and thinking, ugh, you're part of the problem. But you know what it did is that it empowered me because it helped me fix what it was that I didn't like. And then there are still some things about me that I am working on. Like I can be really defensive. But the most empowering and liberating thing about self-discovery is you can tell me that I'm defensive and I will not get defensive. I'm not going to get upset because I already know who I am. The only time that I ever get upset is when somebody tells me something about myself that I absolutely know is not true, because I don't like that. Like, who does? It's uncomfortable and it makes me feel like, what did I do that this person doesn't know who I am to think that I am one way or the other. Anyways, that was a long way around telling you to educate yourself about who you are and what imposter syndrome is and what the triggers are for you. I think documentation, that's another thing you can do. Writing things down. I know I talk about writing and journaling a lot. And you know, guys, it's really important to write things down because you can go back to it and you can refer to it later. And it is powerful to write things down. It really provides clarity. And you can also, when you're writing things down about what you're insecure about and what you feel like an imposter about, you can also write down your successes. And I bet you, if you think about your successes, there's going to be more of those than there are going to be failures. I think that I kind of hit on this a little bit about perfectionism, but I think this is really important to accept that being perfect is not possible. That's really hard. If you struggle with perfectionism, you're not going to want to wrap your head around that reality. But accepting that it's not possible will allow you to freely make mistakes and be okay with it. And then challenge your negative thoughts. I always talk about challenging negative thoughts, and it's always going to be a reoccurring theme because it works for everything. Most of the things that we're insecure about, it's because of the negative stories that we're telling ourselves. So we have to challenge our negative thoughts. Again, I think journaling is a great way to do it because it's really, really important to write it down. And I think I talked about it in my last podcast about multitasking, how it's not really a thing. So if you're just walking around challenging your negative thoughts, you're not really ingraining them into a new pattern for yourself. The only way to ingrain them is to stop and think about what your negative thoughts are, write them down, and then counter them with positive thoughts. That's really important to do. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about what you can take away from this. So we learned about the 5 stages of imposter syndrome, and we learned some things that you can do to help yourself overcome it. The last thing I want to say is to understand that you are absolutely not alone. Most people are going to deal with imposter syndrome at one point or another in their life. whether they deal with it chronically or situationally. Most people can identify what it feels like to feel like you don't belong in a place, to feel like you're not good enough in a place. And knowing that can be really liberating, and it can help you to feel like, all right, this is something that everyone deals with. It doesn't make me unique. It just means that I have to figure out what triggers I experience in my own life. And just know that you can overcome it. You can overcome it by talking about your fears, by writing down your fears, by challenging your negative thought process. And I mean, I'm a real proponent of working with a mental health professional, a therapist or a counselor. I think that it's really, really important to work with somebody who has training in the field of mental health, because we understand how to counsel people to get them to a place where they can understand themselves better, understand their thought processes better. Thought processes? I think that's how you pronounce it. I don't know. I digress. Whatever. But a mental health professional is a trained person in mental health, and they can help you dissect why you are feeling like an imposter, and then can help you on the road to recovery so that you don't feel like an imposter for much longer. So that's basically what I got for you today. Hopefully you feel like it was a pretty good episode, and I hope that you took away some pointers and some things that you can do moving forward to think about what situations trigger your imposter syndrome and what are you going to do about it. Are you going to write? Are you going to challenge yourself? Are you going to talk to somebody? What is it that you're going to do? Because I think it's important to do something. So thanks for listening to this episode, and I just want you to remember that it is possible to manage your anxiety. You are worth the effort it takes to live an empowered life.
Thanks for listening, guys. This is Monica Pitek-Fugetti. Hope you guys have a great week.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Mind Gal Podcast. Go over to mindgal.com now to sign up for your free 30-day anxiety challenge and have access to proven resources to help you manage anxiety. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast so that you don't miss any future episodes. And please take a moment to give us a 5-star rating and write a review in the App Store. Thanks for listening.